Welcome to Money Made Simple. Our next guest is the Director of Marketing at Jollibee, the beloved fast food and QSR chain. Prior to this, she was working at leadership and marketing teams at Microsoft and Amex. At Jollibee, she is responsible for brand penetration and growth, and Jollibee now has an impressive 28 locations in the UAE. Other than her stellar career and resume, she's a voice in the marketing field, as well as an avid writer, writing about personal musings, work in all social media platforms. Shivangi, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
That's great. You've spent over a decade now in the marketing field, probably a little bit more than that. What started your journey in marketing?
I would say, you know, everything that I was doing had had a touch of marketing in some way or form. So I started my career at American Express as a data analytical person. So I was working in the risk and fraud division at the time. It's funny because the reason I took up that role was because I didn't want to go into hardcore coding. So I took the easier way out, and I was like, I'm going to do something which is not very deep into hardcore coding. We didn't have wipe coding at the time. Yeah. So we had to actually sit down and learn how to code, which I hated. Engineer by education, but didn't want to do the engineering job. So I ended up joining the risk and fraud division at American Express.
Yeah.
And data analytics was my first job, where I was doing pattern matching and consumer behavior matching on card transactions to identify anomalies.
Frauds, for instance.
The fraud anomalies, yes. Yeah. So that has now transformed into today what I'm doing, which is consumer behavior and pattern matching in food consumption.
I see. So okay.
I would say a marketing journey, so to say, was always there. But it's just that I was honing my skills in data analytics. I was always a person who was more interested in observing people, in understanding the psyche, understanding behaviors. Always been an observer, always been a people watcher. And I think this job kind of brings those two things together. Whatever I learned during my tech days, I'm now applying in my non-tech field and the jobs that I'm doing. And it gives me an edge over people who have never worked in tech, because data and data analytics,
I have the background,
it's also a very scary thing to do, and fairly understandable because it is a little technical. It can be a little daunting to look at data and patterns and run models and stuff. But the fact that I'd done this before, I think I've always been very comfortable with data in that way. And it gives me an edge over other people in the industry. So that transition from tech to food was purely experimental. I was bored of tech, and I wanted to get into, you know, something which was more consumer facing.
Yeah.
Because the tech that I had done was more B2B. So it was Amex, Microsoft. It was all working with larger organizations which would further sell the solutions or use the solutions. But I wanted to be more consumer facing. That's why I quit Microsoft and I tried to figure out what industries I could work in. And that's when I made my foray into food. And I think marketing in consumer facing is the most exciting thing. I'm just enjoying being in front of the consumer, seeing that the validation that you get from consumer is a lot better. So that's been pretty much my journey until now.
And I think the validation is much more immediate. I remember when, you know, during the winters, when I take the metro, I think from Berjaman to Media City, there were these Jollibee ads of the spicy chicken burger.
Oh my God, yes, I love
and
that.
And it's
sandwich.
Not just the ad. It's you put the ingredients, you specify this, you put the kind of bread, the sauce. Mm. So then when someone's waiting on the metro, you're like, I want to eat this.
Yeah.
And then upstairs in the mall, there's a branch over there. So the reaction is quite quick.
Mm.
Whereas compared to probably a tech company where probably it's longer, or even in Amex, for instance, where you look at consumer behavior.
Yeah.
So what I was trying to understand is, with data, like you said, you have this edge. And data is just more about more than spreadsheets or more than having tools.
Yeah.
What do you think you've learned the most, whether it's in Amex or Microsoft for now, about consumer behavior?
Good question. I think one of the things that really has stood out for me through all of these years of understanding or looking at people and their behaviors is that we are creatures of habit. At the end of the day, all humans. When I look at B2B work, which I did with Amex and Microsoft, over there I was talking to decision makers who were the leaders of organizations like governmental organization, educational organization, health tech and all that stuff. And they were buying, let's say, Microsoft solutions to use in within their own systems. We had a hard time. I was working on the marketing strategy for these people and, you know, sell them deeper solutions and more customized solutions, so to say. But given that they had only worked with a certain kind of tech and a certain kind of systems, the inertia to change that behavior was really big. Now, that was tech and B2B. When we bring it to B2C, which is food today, so before Jollibee, I was working with Happy Platter Kitchens, and now over here, HPK was entirely a cloud kitchen, a virtual brand base. And we used to see how people behave on delivery. And it's so repetitive. Like, no one wants to have a bad experience with food.
Yes.
So you would always go for the brands or for experiences that you've done before. So even if you look at apps today,
no deliver on time, Kareem, right.
The first tab on top is order again.
Yes.
Because it taps into this behavior that once I've tried it, I would want to come back for it again because I don't want to have a bad experience. And we are creatures of habit. Mm. I personally think of myself, I have the same four or five brands. If I don't want to experiment, which is mostly the case, like I would do that on a weekend. Maybe I have like some people over or stuff. But on a day-to-day basis, if I want to order my meal because I don't want to cook, I would go for my tried and tested option. And that is the frequency. That is the repeat behavior. So I think that is a common thread that I have observed and seen in people. And I think it relates really well to how we are as human beings, right? Like change is the biggest...
Creatures of habit.
Change is the biggest challenge that we have. Like it takes so much effort to make that conscious change, and we would not make a change unless and until we are incentivized to do so. So that incentive has to be big enough for me to make that change in my habits to be able to bring the customer on board.
And even, right, like you said, when you look at any of the apps, now that I realize whenever I go back to a restaurant... It does say, do you want to order the exact same food that you've done? So now that you've explained it to me, it's kind of it clicked that this is why it's done.
Yeah. It's all psyche behind it.
That you'd rather order the same thing. You don't want to check in.
I'm sure, like, do you order from different places every time?
Again, it's the top four or five. One place for Chinese, one place for Italian.
Yeah.
Fast. That's it. Sometimes if, like you said, over the weekend or if I'm outside, I want to order. Maybe it's a different place.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's the top maximum seven, whichever app I use, it's the top seven or eight restaurants.
Yep. It's the same. I ordered like Thai green curry yesterday. Mm. It's this one place that I order from. And I'm like, I know this flavor really works well for me. Yeah. I like their preparation. I like their flavor. Like there are several brands which have a Thai green curry. And it's Thai food is something that I really enjoy.
Same,
but I go to the same place. Every time. The only difference that I would make is it a prawn curry or is it a chicken curry?
Yeah. But it's the same base.
Yeah.
You were talking about habits and how people find it difficult to change. But if you've seen your career, you've not stayed with the same field, which is really good. And I find that people that I speak to, they're really boxed up for years in the same kind of field. But you've had that confidence to transition from one field to the other, do it so well, and become an expert in that. Mm. So where does this confidence come from, and how do you transition so seamlessly from one field to the other?
Big question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'll tell you where it began for me tech-wise. I went into tech because I was really good at science. Mm. And as a true Indian kid, I studied engineering and got good at it and then got a job which paid me well and all that stuff. But I think I always knew that this is not something that aligns with me so well. Even if I'm doing well and the companies are great and I can move from Microsoft to a Google to an Apple, a Facebook, whatever, I don't see myself living that life. I'm intrinsically a person who likes to experiment with things, except for my food. Sometimes I do experiment with my food. But I think for me, my work has to be very aligned with who I am as a person. And my work has to be very aligned with what my interests are. I cannot see a job as a job. Like a job is a job is a job. I get it. But also if I'm spending 8-10 hours every day at a workplace, I need to be more inspired. And I need to be more... passionate about the subject. So, and while tech was very interesting, a lot of fun, like Microsoft, I had so much fun. Amex, I learned so much. When you're like 21 years of age and you get a Amex Platinum card, as well. So, because you're working with American Express. So that was a great feel too. And these were great companies to work with. I found some amazing people, learned a lot from them. But I felt like something was missing always. I definitely had the desire to do more consumer-facing stuff and try that out. One of my biggest fears was that I'm going to box myself into one industry, and then I will keep circling between the same 3-4 companies. I'll jump from one to the second to the third, and then back to one. And I know a lot of people find a lot of inspiration in staying at one place forever and building their entire career over there. And I think that that's great. It just is something that doesn't work for me. Mm. I'm a person who wants to explore a lot more in my life. And this is how I am in my personal life as well. So my sense of exploration comes from really seeing what can I do? What more can I explore? What more can I learn? I think it comes from a sense of curiosity, which I think I've always had as a kid. My parents were really, really a great influence in, you know, sort of instilling that sense of curiosity in us. So that was one strong value that we grew up with as kids. My mom is a really smart, really intelligent woman. Dad, same ways. And I think growing up around two very strong personalities does that to you in some way. So when I was quitting Microsoft, I was like, I just want to explore and see. Like, at the end of the day, while industry knowledge is important, the main crux of skills comes from knowing what you're doing, of wanting to learn. So I think one thing that I relied on was my sense of observation. And I am a very inquisitive person, so I do ask a lot of questions as well. So I think I would just, like, when I came into Jollibee, I'm sure I asked, like, some stupidest questions in meetings and stuff. But I was like, it's fine. I'm just willing to learn. I'm just wanting to see where this goes. I understand the basics of the field.
Yeah.
What I understand how humans work, because humans work the same way in every possible.
Industry-wise, yeah.
Right? Like, I am a human at the end of the day. If I'm making a decision for food or for fashion or for tech or my own personal, I don't know, apps or healthcare or whatever. Mm. But I will always make decisions based on my own personality. If I'm a certain personality type, if I think in a certain way, I will make those decisions. I, as a marketer, my job is to understand that human and the motivations of that human and observe them thoroughly, like without judgment, without really trying to extrapolate their behavior into something. So I think data is one thing. And then the other thing is about really wanting to learn consumer behavior, observe it, and truly, truly do firsthand exploration of consumers. That these two things have really helped me transition through industries. And hopefully I'll make several more transitions in the future, because, yeah, like, what's fun in life if you're not doing any exploration?
So that's the thing, Shivangi. What I find very refreshing that you said curiosity and data. One of the things that you didn't mention, which I observe, is your appetite for risk is much more as well.
Fair, yeah.
Because having graduated in the finance field, I've known friends of mine who've stayed in big four companies or any tech companies, and this is their goal for their whole life, which is their decision. It's their choice.
Yeah.
But their willingness to even go to another field or to another company is something that scares them because they've studied this. So it must be that they have to go in this company. They have to go in this field.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, exploring another field, another passion is very scary, or it's out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
So for you to actually say and actually live that kind of life, work-wise, a personal life as well, is very refreshing. So it comes down to, I feel, the level of risk as well.
I agree. And I've had, when I take these decisions, usually I go with my gut and I go with my intuition. I'm a very intuition-driven person. So my decisions are driven by that, and I have a very high sense of what is a high risk for me, what is a low risk. But yes, you're right. I'm not a risk-averse person at all. When I quit my job at Microsoft, I did not have a job in hand, and I moved countries to Dubai, and I just figured my stuff out over here, met people, networked, did some freelancing, because I knew my motivation was to go towards something that aligns with me the best, something that makes me feel that I am doing justice to my skill level, I am exploring. But when I'm doing those things, I think of it in a way that, oh my God, this is a very high risk situation. Because if you think like that, then the fear comes in.
Yeah.
So I think instinctively, that's not a thought that comes to me. That's when I had moved and done this, And I was freelancing and trying to figure out, meet people and trying to figure where I want to go next. I had several friends come in and say, and ex-colleagues as well, like Microsoft colleagues, and be like, I would never do this.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very high risk thing and you're very bold to do it. I think for a long time, I didn't even realize that it is a very high risk thing, because sometimes when you don't see a wall, it's good for you.
Mm.
So I think that kind of is just the way I operate. And I don't want to change that about myself, because I think it really gives me that freedom to see the world as something that I can really explore. I am not a person who, like you said, you have friends who do one thing, yeah, and they just like know that this is the path.
This is their path for the, yeah.
I feel for me that fatigue and the need to not box myself is much bigger than anything else. Like, I did not want to become a techie in the sense that I've lived my entire life in tech and I'm showing up at airports wearing the tech swag,
yeah,
merch and stuff. And that was my nightmare, because I felt like my identity should not be associated with the brand that I'm working for. My identity is my own and I'm known for my own work. And I need to keep separating the two, because there is that thing that comes in after a while, right? So I think one of my biggest fears was that I'm known for being a person at Microsoft.
Mm.
And I introduced myself as like, hi, I'm Shivangi, I work with Microsoft.
Mm.
I was like, okay, so then what if I remove the second sentence? Then
yeah, where is your identity then?
Who am I? Mm. Who am I known as? And I think that was the biggest motivators when I quit that job. So it's just about not... The risk of losing my identity is bigger than the risk of switching, if that makes sense.
I
look at risk in a way that, who am I? How do I define myself? Am I living my life true to myself? Not just in my personal time, but also in my professional time. But the risk of leaving a job and finding something, I'm just like, it's fine, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm... Something or the other will happen. I'll figure it out.
I think on paper,
mm,
it does appear like a risky move, because you left one of the biggest companies in India,
yes,
to come here.
Yes.
But eventually you succeeded. So those initial moments, were you at all nervous, I think, for the first month or two?
For sure.
Or did you just very effortlessly say, I'm going to Dubai, I'll figure things out on my own?
I wish it was that effortless. Of course, like, no matter how sure you are about a certain decision, I think there's a difference. Okay, so one is the surety about the decision, and the second is the fear of the decision. I think I've always been very sure about those decisions that I took. The fear is not really a fear of what will be. It is a little bit of anxiety, I would say, about it might not go well. But then I'm like, if I'm going to overthink, I'm going to overthink the positives rather than overthink the negatives, and we'll figure it out. I think one of the things that I've always told myself, got a tattoo as well for it, is that I am my own anchor.
Okay.
Yeah. And I will always take care of myself. No matter what happens, I'll be okay. It'll be fine. And so, of course, there was a lot of anxiety. It was a discussion in the family when I was going to do this thing.
You're leaving this job?
You're leaving this cushy job that pays you so well and you have your career set and it's like so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, like, my parents are very curious and open-minded people as well. Of course, they had their fears, bigger than mine. But they came around. They were like, we trust you and, you know, we're always here. If anything happens, we'll figure it out. So I think it comes from there.
Yeah. And it's natural for parents to worry for their kids. And I think you were talking about identity, separating your personal and professional life. You've done that really well with your writing. Which is one of the things that
Wait, where have you seen my writing?
On Instagram.
Oh, I see.
And you wrote a really nice post about your mom on Mother's Day.
Yes. Was it Mother's Day? Which post are you talking about?
You were writing a long poem.
Oh, yes. I have. Yeah. Wow, you went really long back.
I did research to kind of understand the guests that I'm interviewing. So you've done that really well in kind of separating your own identity with writing and everything. So I just wanted to bring that up. Wanted to ask also, in terms of teams, you mentioned once, I think on LinkedIn, I saw that it's very important to have the right team and the right people within your department and other departments as well. How do you know that when you look through hundreds of CVs for interviews, how do you know you're looking at the right person? Or what skill sets post-hiring do you think make a person stand out?
I think I look at these two things differently. I think one is a thing, mostly like I look at, you know, the common theme between pre-hiring and post-hiring is that I look at the person as an individual on their own. What are their values? I'm not trying to force fit anyone into their role, and I don't want them to try to force fit themselves because it just doesn't work. So one of the primary things for me is, are you a person who holds the same values as what I have in my team, which is of mutual respect, which is of doing the best work, which is of being very self-dependent? Doesn't mean that you don't seek collaboration, you don't seek support. It means that you're responsible and you have accountability for your own work. I'm not going to come after you and ask you whether you did this or did this well, or whether this is your best job or whatever. Like, I'm not going to push you for that. I think as adults, if you are in a career, that should be your goal, to do the best work.
That's why you're coming to work,
And my job would be to give you the best environment in which you can flourish. So I think when I look at candidates who apply for roles in marketing, there are two, three things that stand out to me. One is the level of autonomy they bring in. That's what I try to check in their previous work. Second, I think marketing as a function, a lot of times can, you know, sort of can be camouflaged as like, oh, I understand, I've done, you know, either I've done a lot of performance work, which is digital and like, you know, about social conversions and stuff, about how do I drive ROI, how CTR, do I drive the CAC, the NPS, etc. But the other thing is about really understanding where the brand is, how the brand operates, and what do you really have to do to build those things? Because sure, you're running certain campaigns and that's fine. You'll have agencies on board, you'll have designers on board to do all of that work for you. But at the end of the day, you're the decision maker as well. So how are you making those decisions? And if you don't understand the ins and outs of that work that the agency is doing for you, then I don't think you can make a great decision. So one thing now, especially in this day and age, which stands out for me is if someone has their own understanding of content, maybe they create content of their own. I think that is a great thing a marketer can bring on board, especially early ages.
Yeah.
If you're a person who's a content creator, even if, like, I'm not saying that you have to be like a full-time, you know, you have to have 50K. But
it complements the role, yeah.
I think you have to go through you have to understand the struggle of it. It's not just about being on Instagram or TikTok. You could be doing something on LinkedIn. You could be doing something on Substack. But like something that has the rhythm of that creativity for you to understand your audience, to understand what works, what doesn't, community engagement and all that. So if a candidate brings that on board, I think that is like 100 aura points kind of a thing for that candidate. And it definitely puts them way ahead of other candidates. So autonomy, content creation, understand like firsthand experience of content creation. And the third that I would say is, of course, like data is, I think, hygiene. I wouldn't even want to mention it at this point. If you don't understand data, then I don't know what I will do with you.
Yeah.
But the other is relationship building. Like for me, these are things that really stand out. If you are not a person who can build a cohesive environment or who can be a part of a team as a whole, because marketing is a function that works with everybody. We work with finance, we work with operations, we work with procurement. All of these other functions can do their work in silos pretty much.
Yeah. Marketing needs the support of
We need to have
the
support
others.
Of everybody. We need to have alignment with everybody to make anything work. So if you're not a person who can do relationship building, who can work in a collaborative way, who can actually work through tough situations and tough discussions, because a lot of these discussions get really hard, then the burden of that will come more on me. And I think as a team, we wouldn't be able to do much because we all need to own parts of conversations. Mm. So that those are three things that I would mention.
A lot of it, tough decisions, is also between finance and marketing. Like, at least in my experience, we've had worked for the biggest companies here. So marketing would come to me for a budget for a campaign. And I'd be like, "What have you checked with three other suppliers? Are the costs justified, everything?" So it's finance or other departments that kind of question that. But I agree with you, if the person coming across in front of me is confident, they know their stuff, then it's very unlikely that me as a finance person would say no.
Yeah.
If it makes sense, you understand what's going on, and it's growing for the business, then why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, ideally. I think As long as it's an ROI discussion, yes, then it can be a little black and white. But the challenge happens when it's a non-ROI investment, and marketing has a lot of them.
Long-term and investments, yeah.
Long-term investments. I feel we talk about brand building, we talk about brand awareness, and a lot of work that is done to prop a brand up. To be able to make a campaign which drives ROI successful, it is sitting on a pile of non-ROI driving work, which is just, you're putting in money, you're pumping in money to create that entity, to create that personality for the brand that when you run a campaign, the customer will come for it and they will give you a higher ROI. That pile of the non-ROI generating work is what determines whether your ROI is 6x, 10x, 20x, whatever number that you want to drive. So I think that non-ROI driving part of the work is what becomes a little hard to work with finance, which is a department whose role primarily is cost saving and driving profitability, right? Ensuring that the books are always clean, ensuring that our P&L is healthy, margins are great, which is fair because that is their job. But if someone comes into marketing and they are getting agitated with these conversations and they don't know how to handle these conversations, that will be a big challenge to like move ahead, I feel, in a career in marketing, because that is one of the primary jobs. It takes up a lot of time to do those negotiations.
It does, during meetings and everything. First-hand experience, it does take a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
So now if we move to Jollibee.
Mm.
In the UAE, there's now 28 branches of Jollibee. And I think in terms of growing the brand from where it was, entering the UAE and the success that it's had, I think there's two key demographics, and please correct me if I'm wrong. One is the core demographics of people that have known and grew up with Jollibee, which is from the Philippines.
Yeah.
And then it's trying to increase the reach of other nationalities, the other general population, to kind of try Jollibee and be regular customers as well. Mm. So how has that approach happened, and how have we increased both in core base as well as general population?
Right. I think Jollibee as a brand, while working with this brand, I consider ourselves very lucky to have this really strong, loyal consumer base in Filipinos. Like the way these guys show up, it's phenomenal. It's beautiful to watch. And I think seeing that firsthand in a brand like Jollibee has just like, it shows how loyal can a customer be and how much you can do with a loyal base. As a brand, we have a long way to go to even service this loyal consumer base. That is something that we're working towards. But yes, the problem is so unique because it's not a base of customers which is diverse and loyal. It's like one ethnicity which is super loyal because it's their homegrown brand and they have this massive pride in the brand. And another set of customer which perceives it as a brand which is associated only with that ethnicity does not consider themselves as a consumer of that brand, but when they try the product, they like, this product is really good and it's not Filipino. And I thought this was a specific Asian flavor. So it's a very unique problem to deal with for sure for us. The line that we have to toe is to make sure that our loyal customer base is taken care of. They always feel that they are heard and they are engaged with, while also trying to recruit the new consumer. That means we have to somewhere change the way we communicate to be able to bring the newer customer into the fold. So that balance is very key for us. We do that with products. We ensure that the Filipino favorite products are always front and center. Mm. We always have their favorite combo meals always there on promotions if we can. When we talk about the newer consumer base, we are trying to create new products which bring them into the brand. So for example, our chicken sandwich, the spicy variant of chicken sandwich is a favorite with a lot of South Asians and Arabs as well.
Right.
Then we just launched nuggets a while ago.
The spicy chicken
nuggets are really popular. They have really the natural
spicy,
oil.
Really, really spicy. Hence the name.
Yeah, spicy. That's why the heat is not like just for the name of it. I think one thing that we focus on is that if we call something spicy, it truly is. It's not just, you know.
You have a flag above each chicken as well.
We have a flag above each chicken as well. Really want to tell you that this is going to be spicy, so you better be prepared for it. But we also launched a pistachio kunafa sundae last year, which was, of course, inspired by the Dubai chocolate.
Yeah.
And we wanted to democratize the flavor and reach out to the local audience. So we are doing things to engage with the newer audience, bring them into the fold. The brand had never done a communication with them. There was no way that the brand was engaging with a diverse audience before. When this strategy, the business strategy changed, like, we need to bring in more people into the brand, and we don't want to be just a Filipino catering brand. The market is so diverse and we're leaving a lot of consumers behind. We had to change our communication model in a lot of ways, bring in a lot more diverse faces into our ads and our campaigns, work with a lot of UGC, a lot of influencers who were, you know, more from a more diverse background, bring in products, be available, increase access to our brand. So when Jollibee came into the country, a lot of the concentration of stores was only in older Dubai side. We've now started slowly branching out to the newer Dubai side. We have, you know, we renovated our Dubai Mall store. We have stores in MOE, and the MOE store got renovated as well. We have Barsha, we have Business Bay, and we have a lot more plans for the coming year as well. And in some really nice malls too. So that builds access to a consumer which has never interacted with Jollibee. So that when they try it, we know our product is really good. And once they try it, they will always come back. But our job is to make sure that the brand is accessible, and we are always talking to them where the gap of, is this brand for me or not? Is this a Filipino brand? Or like, oh wait, this brand is actually fine and I can order. It is one of the brands that I can look at when I want to have a burger, a sandwich, fried chicken.
And it's that kind of balance, I feel, that it's very unique to Jollibee, in the sense that when you look at the core menu, your fan favorites like spaghetti, chicken, or gravy, that's there. And when I compare to the menu in the Philippines, when I visit Philippines quite often, so there are like the chicken sandwich or the Jolly Wrap, even the pistachio kunafa. These are items that are unique to the Middle East, maybe in other countries as well, but are not there in the Philippines. So you have that front and center. But there's also this effort to kind of bring in people from other ethnicities. Even, I think, with the sauces, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's true.
So when we talk about increasing the awareness of Jollibee within the UAE, we see a lot of ads, which is really nice. And these aren't just small ads. These are prominent ads. Like I was talking about in metro stations, where you just have like a massive burger there. So how did you come up with the overall idea, and what was the intent behind it?
When we think of our ads and our, especially when we think of outdoor, currently, of course, like, because outdoor is really expensive, we definitely tie it to very, very primary products and very, very primary launches for us. Any big campaign, any big launch is something that we tie together with outdoor. But metro, for example, is something that we, advertising inside metro stations is something that we invest in, because we know a lot of our consumers, a lot of our existing loyal base uses metro. And then, given that a lot of our locations, store locations, are in food courts in malls, which are obviously very close to metro stations, almost every mall has a metro station exit close to it. It creates that recent communication bias for the consumers as well. So that's another thing that we look at. What it does is that we get access to a consumer which is always on the move. A lot of times QSR is not a planned purchase. Like, you wouldn't think of that.
More of an impulse purchase.
It's more of an impulse purchase. Like, oh, I really want to eat a fried chicken. I feel like eating a burger today. So let me see. Let me order a KFC. Let me order a Jolly Burger. Let me order a McDonald's. You know, it could be either of these. And then you have your set preferences, because you go to the same brand. You want to have a spaghetti and a chicken joy, you would come to Jollibee. You want to have a pistachio kunafa sundae, you'll come to Jollibee, because nobody else has it. You would want to have like a specific burger from McDonald's, you would go and have that. So everyone has their own pros and cons.
Or an ube ice cream.
Or ube ice cream.
Which is
ube
unique to Jollibee as well,
Yes, very, very Filipino flavor for us.
Yeah.
I think when we think of QSR, a lot of times, what I've observed in consumer behavior in QSR is that it's very different from other dine-in, you know, purchases. I will plan for eating a biryani. It won't be my last-minute purchase. Or I will plan for going out and eating Italian or like ordering, but like when it comes to QSR, and I'm not just talking about burgers and fried chicken, I'm also saying like a pizza.
These are like
impulse purchases. These are like, oh, I feel indulgent. It's my cheat day. I want to have something like which is more indulgent and stuff. Or like, I just want to treat myself today and I want to eat this. So plus the other thing is that when you're going to a mall, you would be more open to eating in the food court. And a lot of times that communication really helps build that recency for us.
And it's that recall value as well.
It's a recall value, yes. Yes, so that's what it is. And we try to focus on big product images, big product communication, because that's the product that we want to focus on. We always bring in our bestseller products over there. And the communication is always about that this is the indulgence that you're getting. So what you were talking about earlier about the Jolly Burger, when we had the ingredients mentioned, or like spicy chicken sandwich, we talked about the three-way spicy. Mm. Like, why is it three-way spicy? It's the marination, it's the breading, and then it's the sauce. So it's like three ways of adding spice to it. It is feeding into that need of indulgence. It's feeding into the need of that need for having like a great cheat meal, so to say. And I also feel food decisions are very visual. I don't know anyone who just looks at a text menu and just like orders. Decides. Like it just doesn't happen like that. You need to have like great images. So whether it was my previous job with HPK or here, one of the things that I've always been very passionate about and focused on a lot is food photography.
Mm.
That the photography of the food, if it doesn't look indulgent, if it doesn't make me want to take a bite out of that picture itself, then what am I even doing? You know, like then it doesn't serve the purpose. So it might be a more premium brand versus a QSR, let's say, but the pictures still have to look like I want to take a bite out of it right now. If it doesn't do that, it's a failed product for me. It's a failed photography for me.
Which is why I think when those ads were there in those prominent metro stations, I knew, like when I was taking the metro, there is a Jollibee just upstairs. Do I just go to the Jollibee, take the metro later? Yeah. But that kind of, like you said, thought process is there with the quality of the images. One of the good learnings, I think, from a marketing journey, like, see, when Jollibee started in the UA, it probably started with one branch, two branch, and now it has 28. In addition to that, if you look at every major food delivery app, I would assume it's probably in the top 5 or top 10 QSR restaurants being ordered. So obviously it's scaled, capacity has grown, people have grown, the operations, cooking, and even finances have grown. How has the marketing journey from day one to until now, how has that changed?
I think when you think of the marketing journey for Jollibee, it's really changed with, you know, the brand has been in the market for like almost 11 years now.
Mm.
So when it first came in, delivery wasn't as big.
Yes.
There were lesser options. It was primarily a dine-in location. Everyone was doing dine-in more. The brand was also very new. So obviously we didn't have that big, our own in-house delivery system wasn't that big, which holds a certain value now. But yes, like post-COVID, 2018, 2019. 2018 is when Kitopi launched.
Yeah.
That was when the entire world was seeing this change towards delivery. In India, we had Zomato, Swiggy pick up really, really well. Like people had started ordering more comfortably and more often. Same thing was happening over here. And then this change just got amplified during COVID. Like everybody was creating cloud kitchens and virtual brands. Customers were willing to order in a lot more because digital payments were becoming easier. The tools existed. The ecosystem as a whole was developing. And there were more brands available on delivery. And then in Dubai, in a market like UAE, delivery is not very expensive, because we have access to a much lower delivery fee because of the ecosystem and the population that exists over here and the gig economy, the size of the gig economy that exists over here. So I feel that change between ordering groceries, making your own food, and you know the cost that it comes down to versus what you order in when you order in your food has just like changed, transformed completely over the last 7-8 years. And it's been the same journey for Jollibee as well. Our delivery growth is much higher than our dine-in growth. Okay. Now we have Keeta, which has come in a few months back.
Right.
And they have come in with deep pockets and wanting to disrupt this market. And of course, like with a new aggregator coming in and putting in all that money to grow in this market for brands like us, just existing on these platforms, because we know we are one of the top brands in QSR in the market. we know the kind of jump it creates for us, and the needle shifts even more towards delivery. So that's what has happened for us. And for the brand, that's what reflects our investments as well. What, okay. You know, as a finance person, you would know, of course, like P&L-wise, it's harder to justify delivery. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to do is figure that balance out between, because the best experience for Jollibee rests in dine-in, of course. Mm. But QSR is all about convenience. People want convenience with QSR. No one wants to go and sit inside a store unless it's an airport or a food court, yeah, or like I'm walking past that street and that's why I see it. I'm like, okay, fine, I'm going
to go. You want things quite quickly, hence the name.
Yeah. You want things quickly, you want things hot, you want things fresh, you want things to be consistent and indulgent. That's all that you want. So for us also, the movement in our investments, whether finance-wise, marketing-wise, operations-wise, is how do we cater to both the need states? How do we cater to this indulgent, convenient need state on delivery without impacting our P&L too much, because it is expensive for the brand to be available on delivery platforms, and it's so competitive with pricing and discounts and stuff. And how do we maintain that experience that we want to give, which is true to the brand, in dine-in?
And what happens also, it's not only the competitiveness of delivery platforms, you also have to make sure that the dine-in experience, even though it's growing slightly less, that also is there. Like I was just passing, driving that day, and I noticed that there's this branch of Jollibee in 2nd December Street, which is very iconic.
Yes.
That is the street where you have Al Mala, you have Firas Suites, you have Etihad Museum.
Yeah.
It's like one of the major streets in the UAE. Mm-hmm. And as you go towards Jumeirah Al Wasl, on the left side, you have this massive red area that is placed for Jollibee. And I'm sure it's increasing traffic as well because of the major Filipino population there. So what was that decision like of setting up shop in that location?
I'm glad you asked this because this is our latest location. We opened it on the long weekend, December, the National Day weekend. Okay. And it's a location we've been very excited about because it truly represents where the brand is at today. Yes. If you've been inside, it's like a massive store. And this is our new concept. So we have modernized the concept quite a lot. So if you look at the signage, if you look at the store fittings.
It's different,
It's from very different from the other stores that you will see. Because very conscious of where the market is and where Jollibee is as a brand, we also understand that there's a massive need for the brand to modernize in its store look and feel as well. It is a brand which has really relied on its loyal consumer support. But if we are going to attract a newer audience, we have to play at par with how the UAE market operates. And UAE operates very differently from Asia, from like Singapore, from Vietnam, from Hong Kong, etc. So this branch has been that marker in a way that, and why that location was important was because this is a very primary Filipino area.
Yeah.
We have another Satwa store.
In Manila building,
Satwa, yes, which is one of our oldest locations. I think the third location or the second location that opened up in the
country. That's a bigger one as well. I think it's two floors.
It is two floors. It's really big too. But we wanted another location in Satwa, one as a marker of, you know, a respect to the loyal audience that we have, that, you know, we have this audience, we know they love the brand, we want to give them a better experience, and we want them to experience the newer form of Jollibee first before we open it anywhere else. And second, it also signifies the shift that the brand is making towards, you know, modernizing itself, towards the kind of food that it's offering. Our kitchen fittings are very different. The way our layout is done is very different. The kind of things we talk about is very different. So we're very excited about that location, and it has served us so well because when we did the opening, the way the Filipino customers, they showed up, it was so heartwarming. We had like an entire dance and show happening inside the store during the opening. People were lined up outside for like hours.
I saw the images before.
So it's amazing. It's a pretty iconic location for us as well.
That's what I was gonna say, and it brings that wow factor because I think when it was opened, I was traveling then, and when I was on a couple of days later, I took the Satwa roundabout. I was going towards Jumeirah, and I was like, whoa, I was driving. I'm like, what is this?
That is exactly what we intended
to
do. And
I was so excited. This Jollibee, because I was away for that period. And I was like, it's such a massive Jollibee. I want to wait, like, I want to stop and then immediately go.
Yeah.
And it's completely different in the sense, in terms of layout, like you said, design from other locations. So I think in terms of Jollibee, it's not only a new connection for many of the Kababayans and Filipinos. I think it's decades old. with them and they have this as a core memory. Mm. I remember during my childhood, I used to go every Saturday to this mall called Vira Mall. Mm. It's located in the Green Hills shopping complex. And many people from Manila or the Philippines would know that you'd get a lot of toys over there, small stores and everything. And at the end of the trip was always this visit to Jollibee. So they had this nice play ritual. Area.
Yeah.
It's a ritual. There were slides over there, the noise of other kids. And every Saturday I used to eat, I think, fries and something else. And the staff were really nice. And it was this core memory that I had of visiting Jollibee every Saturday.
Mm.
And so many decades later, coming to Dubai, seeing that same Jollibee in so many locations, and it's more than food. It's, I think, a memory for all of us. And it's a matter of pride for many Filipinos and OFWs leaving the country, working in different locations, because Jollibee isn't only in the UAE. It's in Times Square. It's in so many locations as well. And I passed by the Times Square location. I didn't know again it was in Times Square. I think this was a couple of months back. I was in the US. I was walking towards and I looked right. I'm like, oh, it's here. And I was so happy to see.
I'm so happy to see how happy you get whenever you see a Jollibee.
I was very, very excited. And so I think it brings these kind of emotions.
That's true.
And that's the beauty about this brand.
It is, isn't it? Like, it's so heartwarming to see how much joy the brand is able to give to people. And this is what I meant when I said, like, all the work that you do, which precedes the ROI work, this is what it generates. This is the capital that it generates. And this lasts you far longer time than just the ROI generating campaigns.
Yeah.
So I think this is one thing that the brand has done really well. You're absolutely right. Like, it has been able to evoke that emotion of joy truly in people, where they associate it with all these memories that they have, core memories. It could be as simple as going to the mall, like you said, or it could be something like, oh, I did my birthday as a kid in Jollibee. Or, you know, whenever we had like a big celebration at home, we would order in Jollibee or at a festival or something. It was always a thing. And I truly, truly believe, you know, it's so funny that we're coming to this point in the conversation, because I remember when I was working on brand concepts for HPK, we were a little digress for this conversation, but just a story. We were four of us probably who was before launching the Cloud Kitchen, even we were working on the brand concepts. And at the time I was working on the business strategy deck, on like, what should the business be about? We knew what we were doing, but we wanted to just like put the story together and think about like, how do we want to position ourselves? And I remember I had this idea and I got so excited about it. It was like 8:30 a.m. and I called up the founder and I was like, hey, I have this idea. And I would, this is what we will do. This is what we will talk about. That food is so emotional. It's a part of all of our lives. And he's like, okay, slow down. Can you just like put a deck together? And I was like, yes, I can. Okay. And then I spent like the next 13 hours working on that deck and that full strategy deck. And that was the deck that went to the investors and to get funding for the, you know, the Cloud Kitchen. But anyway, the idea that I had at the time, which I feel like is an insight into consumer behavior, is that food is an emotional thing. It's something that you engage with in every part of your life. You do it for fitness, you do it for indulgence, you do it for celebration, you do it for your mental health, your physical health. You do it to, I don't know, to enjoy certain moments with your loved ones, whether it's a birthday celebration, an anniversary, a date, I don't know, like everything that we do, every big or small moment has food as a part of it. So food is such an important part of our life. And the fact that we take it for granted in a way that it's just food, it's fine, it's just a restaurant. It's not really, it's not, is it?
That, yeah.
Because it's an experience. Subliminally, it is adding to that experience. You would buy a certain kind of food because that adds to that experience for you. And I think that's why the fact that Jollibee has done this so well in, you know, the way they started in Philippines and the way they were able to build that association with the consumer is phenomenal. That consumers see it as a part, like all the Filipinos even here, even if there are kids who have, you know, not been to Philippines in, I don't know, years, probably they were born over here and they're raised over here. They have that strong association because their families have that strong association. And this is all because the brand was able to tap into those emotions, be a part of those moments of celebration, because food is emotional. It's never taken for granted. It is something that can make or break my day. If I have a bad meal, I'll be like, oh, I'm so disappointed.
Exactly. It connects. And even what you said perfectly embodies, even if you see the Jollibee ads in the Philippines.
Yeah.
The beautiful ads for 2-3 yeah. minutes. And there was one ad about a graduation, about a mom and the daughter, and then the parents and the children. Every major milestone in someone's life,
yeah,
they've associated that so well.
Yeah.
And it's always been a jolly meal or something. So in the ads as well that are played on TV, it's really very touching the way they've actually connected everything together.
Yeah. The brand also makes short films.
Really?
You know, okay. In Philippines. So when I was interviewing for the brand,
yeah,
and I wanted to do my research on it, I knew about it. I'm not personally a fried chicken consumer as such. So when the brand approached me for the role, I wanted to do my research and understand what's the tone of voice, what does the brand operate like, what are they like, and what apart from like just what they sell. And not just here, I wanted to see what it is like in Philippines so that I know like what is the core of the brand or the history of the brand.
And what
I ended up watching was a whole lot of YouTube videos, which were short films. About, and one that I remember particularly well is about this actor and actress who are trying to meet a little clandestine. They sort of have feelings for each other, but they have like tight schedules, but they spend this entire day together away from their travels, away from their work commitments and stuff, and they're traveling around. Nowhere do I see Jollibee in the entire, like, it's just, it feels like I'm actually watching a movie. But then towards the end, you know, they just want to have like one meal together and they want to feel good about that meal. And that's when they order like a whole load of Jollibee.
Yeah.
And it was such a subtle placement of the product.
Towards the end, yeah.
I feel like the brand has taken that journey where you don't need to be force fitting the brand into every frame of a video. Yeah. It's so beautifully done. It was like a 20-minute video, 20-minute short film.
I should watch this. Okay.
I'll send you the link of it. I probably have saved it on my YouTube somewhere. But yeah, like it's just the last, I think, 10 minutes. It was a 20-minute video. So the last 5 minutes probably is when the brand shows introduced. Up. It's beautiful. And I was like, this is such a heartwarming video to watch. I feel like I'm watching a movie. I'm so entertained. And now my emotions of this romance and this tenderness get associated with
the brand.
The brand. And it's such a nicely done ad. Yeah, I'll send you the link.
Yes, I'd like to watch it. We were talking in the beginning about data and you were talking about how in different companies you understand consumer behavior. I'm just wondering, from a very simplistic point of view, you have a lot of data, let's say, on how consumers order in Jollibee. Does that then influence the kind of marketing campaigns that you do?
Of course, it does. I mean, one thing that we look at, given that one of our primary goals is to diversify our consumer base, is to look at what are the products that work well. What are the products that work well for our non-Filipino audience? We do a lot of invest in a lot of research in like what consumers are going for when we do trials of new products. We, for example, with Noon, we have been sponsoring the IPL campaigns that they run. So Noon gets the exclusive rights for IPL streaming.
Right.
And we primarily use that because we know the audience is South Asians. And it's not going to be any Filipinos over there. So we know that this is the audience which loves eating our chicken sandwich or like a spicy chicken joy.
Yeah.
So in my 2 years in Jollibee, the first time when we did it, which was 2024, we did a campaign on spicy chicken joy. Worked really well for us. We ran those ads. It was primarily an awareness campaign, but then we also had some links, some banner ads, some, you know, placement ads and stuff, which you could click and it would take you to the Noon app, to the Jollibee page on the Noon app. And we would have like specific combos made for IPL specifically using that product. So this is how we use our data and our consumer insight into creating something which is very, very specific to the consumer. Because at the end of the day, I don't want to talk to a new consumer about a product that they wouldn't even have. I would go with my best bet of what is a higher probability of conversion for them.
Okay.
And even if they do not convert, I want them to know that we have these products on the menu and they can walk into Jollibee and always ask for a chicken sandwich and they will not be disappointed.
Okay. If I move towards the final segment of the podcast, if you had to give advice to someone coming into the marketing field to stand out and for that longevity, what do you think are 2 or 3 pieces of advice you would give someone?
I think One definitely would be to experiment with content on your own. I don't care how senior you get. I feel you need to keep creating on your own. Also to, because marketing is one function that requires you to be more creative and think on your feet as well. I feel if you don't practice your creativity, then you're not really evolving as such. So I think one advice definitely would be to practice your creativity, to invest in your creativity, to have interests outside of your work. Like, otherwise your life will become too dull and you will become too dull and you would not show up as a more well-rounded person at work as well. So I think to be able to do a good job, I think this is something that goes for any field, any not field, just marketing, but I think more so for marketing, because marketing requires you to be more creative as well. So definitely to have more interest outside of your work and practice your creativity, whether it's through content or it's through, I don't know, personal writing. You're not even publishing it. You're just doing it because it's a practice of your creativity. That is one. And the second I would say is read up, talk to other people, talk to people in the industry and see what they're doing, explore ideas. Because I think it is very easy to get very siloed into your industry or the people that you're surrounded with. And it barely takes any effort to really go out and read up on what's happening in other industries. How are people behaving in other industries? What's marketing like in a finance field? What's marketing like in a gym membership situation? What's marketing like in a book publishing kind of a company? Because it does give you an insight into how consumers think, and then you start to see that we're pretty similar. We all have patterns and we just need to match those patterns. So I think if you're doing that, for me, you're curious as a person, and if you're able to keep honing that curiosity and tapping into it, ask more questions, then you'll keep learning. And okay. I think that's sort of covers, covers you in the sense that you are able to sustain a much longer career and you won't get bored of doing the same thing. Because one thing that I find leads to a lot of burnout and exhaustion is repetitiveness of tasks. So if you keep creating on your own and you stay curious to be able to consume other stuff, which is not just related to your industry, then you will have newer thoughts. It's a practice of creating those newer thoughts in your brain at the end of the day.
And that also works with routines. I read a study saying that your brain actually changes its function and wiring when you do something different every week, a new routine. Yes. You don't necessarily go to the same coffee shop, the same area. You find something different that kind of rewires the way you think.
The
as
neuroplasticity.
Well. I think that's the right word.
Yes. It's been the talk of the town the last few months, I feel like. But I'm glad it's coming through, because it truly is something that does something to you, right? Like, I feel this is why everyone says that travel is important, because you explore. Yeah. You do something new and you experience something new. It does something to your brain. You come back a little changed. You wouldn't even recognize it, but you have changed Similarly, I remember seeing one video about neuroplasticity, and this person was talking about if you brush your teeth with your right hand, try doing it with your left hand.
How would you even?
You have to have the electric brush to do it. I think easy. A manual.
No, it won't happen.
It won't happen. Yeah. So maybe.
Okay.
Get an electric brush.
I should do that then. Shivangi, this has been such an insightful and engaging conversation about marketing, your journey, and Jollibee. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks so much for having me. I truly enjoyed this conversation. Came in thinking it is going to be very, very corporate and very, very professional. Yeah. And it is professional. But yes, I really enjoyed the free-flowing conversation that we had. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.